Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 29th of May. We're about to start the Platinum Jubilee week, making it a very short week next week. Happy days for us over here in the UK. You celebrating it, Kev? Are you a bit of a royalist?
Oh, yeah, happy celebrating. I mean, the stability in our country over the last 70 years is down partly to our Queen, I think. I don't care what... don't know that I'm a big royalist, but it's definitely a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, they're bringing a lot of tourism and you know, as you say, the stability. Yeah. Can you imagine giving 70 years service for your country?
No, it's amazing. It really is. Whole life has been dedicated to it from a young girl to now. It's wow, isn't it? The hard thing to imagine is who is after the Queen.
I mean, she's now? 90, she's 97. Do you think she's going to make the become a centenarian?
Well, I hope so. I genuinely hope she does. She can send herself a card then, no? So that would be good, because you get a card when you're 100. I had an aunt who actually gave me this wedding ring, which was her mother's wedding ring that I now wear. And she lived till she was 103. And I remember I went to her 100th birthday party, and there it was, the telegram from the Queen.
Yeah, yeah.
You're 100 years old.
My auntie had hers recently, just before lockdown, and we went up there and celebrated. It was amazing. I saw the card from the telegram from the Queen. It was amazing. And she's still going now at 103, 102. So
I've heard some crazy people talking about wanting to make people live till they're 150. Do you know
anything
about
this? It's like Highlander, isn't it? It's like Highlander. Have you watched it? I mean, would you ever want to live forever, Kev? Can you imagine? I mean, all right, not necessarily live forever, but what I would say is improve the quality of your life in your latter years. Yeah. How would that sound?
If I knew that from, say, 70 to 100 years old, I could be active and have a better quality of life, then for sure I'd want to do it, you know? Obviously, there's all sorts of things. If you haven't got the quality of life and you haven't got the finances to live that long, then that's difficult as well, isn't it? You know, so, yeah.
This is segueing pretty well, isn't it, into the guest this week. This is quite...
Yeah, who is the guest this week? I don't remember. Because I'm losing my memory. I'm getting too old. Who is the guest? Introduce yourself.
Okay. Good entry, guys. I'm Eric Clay. I'm the CEO of Genflow Bioscience.
Welcome, Eric.
A longevity company. So very good introduction. I hope you contribute to make the Queen centenarian.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It would be amazing. Now, I quite like that. I'm proud of that segue, how it went from, you know, the Jubilee, the bank holiday into the centenarian, and then here we are. Do you want to tell us about your technology and how you can, let's say, leverage the genes of a centenarian to improve longevity of people's lives?
Yes. You were right in the introduction to say, do we want to live longer? It doesn't mean anything to live longer if you get 30 years of misery with cancer and Alzheimer. What? It's just adding suffering. What we want to do is to help people age better. And if you age better, then yes, I want to be a centenarian if I can run a marathon when I'm 100 years old. Everybody wants that. And you know, what is old? If you had a 20 years old, what is old? It says 65. When you're 65, say, no, it's around 80. And if you're 80 years old, say, oh, it's 90. It's you're always pushing a little bit. How we do that? How do we work on bringing benefit of living longer, better? It's in the genes. Why it's in the genes? You can do all the care you want. You can have a very healthy life. You will still live around 120 max. Stop drinking, stop smoking, stop doing everything. There's a limit, and this limit is genetically defined. Your dog is living 10 years. If you're a mouse, it's 2 to 3 years, and you can improve a little bit, but you know, it's still marginal. If you really want to have an impact, you have to go on the genes. So why the genes? mostly because we understand now the biology of aging. The biology, the biological process that explains the aging is the fact that with years, we have a lot of epigenomic modification. Oh gosh, epigenomic, what does that mean? Epigenomic means that we have a lot of scars on our DNA. Our DNA is fragile, it breaks, and it has to be repaired. Every living organism evolved a lot of genes to repair DNA because it's crucial to life. A life of a plant, a life of a mouse, a life of an elephant, a life of a whale, a life of a human. We have genes only dedicated to repair DNA. With time, there's so many breaks that happens, those genes are overwhelmed. And our gene is poorly repaired. If it's poorly repaired, the cells turn to cancer, to apoptosis, means suicide, or senescence. Senescence means not functional, only getting there and releasing some very bad cytokines that create a pro-inflammatory state. So what we want to do is to provide extra copies of a gene to help your genes to better fight aging by better repairing DNA and escape this epigenomic. Epigenomic means that's the change of your genome due to the environment. It involves a lot of methylation. I don't want to be too technical, but...
And how do you physically provide that extra genes to the body?
It's an interesting point because the way we provide it is to gene therapy. So gene therapy, your people listening to us said, oh gosh, gene therapy is something super expensive, last resort, very dangerous. All that were true 10 years ago, it's not true anymore. Now, gene therapy, the tools we have to deliver genes are ethical. They don't push the gene into your chromosome, so it will not be passed to your kids. It's safe. There's no side effect because it doesn't go into, it does not disrupt the DNA, it does not go into your DNA, it's next to the DNA, and it's very safe, and the cost has been much lower for gene delivery. So what we do, we provide exo AAVs, that's a vector that encapsulated into, let's say, lipids, and a lipid envelope that make it invisible to our immune system so we can repeat the treatment. And it's for you, you go to a clinic, 2-hour infusion, and that's it. And you're set up for years.
So it's a bit like a blood infusion or glucose infusion or something
would,
like this.
Yes, I would say more glucose because a blood infusion need, you have to have your type. You need to have, it's a kind of almost personalized medicine. If you're an AB type, you need to have a blood or an OA or okay. But in this case, it's a pure off-the-shelf product. It will be the same product for everybody. So there's huge economy of scale. And again, the cost will be very cost-effective. It's still not for free, but compared to the cost of treating diabetes or treating Alzheimer's or treating a stroke or treating any kind of neurodegenerative disease like Parkinson, it's nothing. So it's
basically what you're saying is by treating and improving the DNA, then some of the illnesses that are in our body should improve themselves anyway.
Yes. Our DNA is less and less efficient because when it's repaired and poorly repaired with a nucleotide that's inserted in the middle, it doesn't code for the right protein and the cells are becoming less efficient. Some cells are stopping their activity and the tissue become less efficient. And that's what we call aging. And we accept that. And we said, yes, it's aging, it's a fatality, there's nothing I can do. In fact, no. We can do things. We can prevent that because we can help the genes that are supposed to repair the DNA to better repair the DNA. When the DNA is poorly repaired, it can cause consequences like cancer and also poor function of the cell. So by doing this, we improve the function of the cells. So if you improve the function of an immune system cell, like T cell, for example, you will have a better response to a vaccine. And we've seen, for example, that COVID is not the same disease if you're a 10-year-old or if you're 60-year-old, because your immune system is not as functional. Same thing with our muscles. It's more difficult to go up the stairs. Same thing with memory. Where are those keys? I can't remember where are my keys. Have you seen all those old people saying that? You don't do that when you're 20. Yes, yeah, grandpa, your keys are just there.
That I keep losing my glasses, but most of the time they're on the top of my head. So that's...
Vision and memory.
But I mean, the other thing about the technology you mentioned is not just like rejuvenation. It actually has a reversing process. I remember one of your RNSs, and it was about the, I think it was about liver, taking an unhealthy liver and or an old liver and making it young again, which was really, I mean, you think of like cirrhosis of the liver and you know, big drinkers suffering from that. I mean, you could almost give people a new lease of life, right?
Yes. So that's important. It's all about quality of life. Some products are aiming to delay or to stop the aging process. But what we want to do is even more ambitious, is to reverse the aging process. And you mentioned the liver, for example. We start with the liver because low-hanging fruit. We will start a study with 300 mice with liver damage. So they have hepatocytes, liver cells, that are not functional. They're all fibrotic. And we will infuse our exo-AAVs by an infusion. And we chose the liver because all the bolus will go directly into the liver. The liver is the first filter. So that will stop those AAVs. So we know there will be high concentration in these livers. But we could do that with muscle. We could do that with pancreas. We could do that with kidneys. We chose the liver because it's very convenient to demonstrate a benefit.
Yeah.
And the objective is to take an old liver and to make it young again and functional.
So this is the SIRT6 or SIRT6 technology or product, right?
Yes. We have, in terms of technology, we combine two types of technology. We're highly innovative because we are cutting edge on two sides. One, on the understanding of the biology of aging, and that's this sirtuin-6. Sirtuin-6 is a gene of the family of the sirtuins. Sirtuin-6 is very interesting for us because it's a small gene. And it has only function is to code for one protein. So it's very well identified. So we know that the safety profile will not be too complicated. If we take a large gene that codes for several proteins, there's a potential side effect. It's difficult. This one, very interesting, because it's small gene, it can be delivered ethically at low cost with a very good safety profile. What we do is not to use the normal sirtuin-6 that you and Phil and Kevin we have. It's a mutation of this gene that found only on people who live over 100 years, centenarian. And what's really amazing, it's the fact that, in fact, it's two little mutations at the end of the gene that make that mutant, this variant sirtuin-6, threefold better, three times better in repairing DNA. So that's quite exciting.
I remember reading a while ago that there was a company called Altos Labs who were in the US, and they've got a much larger market cap. And I think there's also been talk of, you know, Jeff Bezos being one of their funders, let's say, you know, and a few others, you know, Russian billionaires. But who's your company comparable to on the market, whether that be US or, you know, stateside or in the UK?
First, all the longevity companies are in America, and we wanted to be the first European on this side of the pound company in longevity. You mentioned Jeff Bezos and Altos Lab. We had a relationship with Altos because he wanted to steal one of our scientists who decided to stay with us, and Vera Dobrynova declined to go to Altos and preferred to go to our place because she had more freedom to pursue her research. Anyway, Altos Lab, I'm very happy. That's a lot of money on longevity. For the first 3 years, they will develop only basic research, not focused on drugs. So they are a little bit, we are in advance with them. We are more advanced in the term of product development. They go for rejuvenation also to reversing aging. That's very attractive. I have mixed feeling about Altos because, you know, it's big money. And we've seen Google 3 years ago coming with a company called Calico. They put billions of dollars and nothing came out of Calico. And now the Altos is putting, Altos Lab is, and Bezos and other billionaire from Silicon Valley are putting a lot of money. I hope there will be better results than with Calico. It gives the impression to people that longevity is just a stuff for rich billionaire in Silicon Valley who will live forever and the rest of us will have miserable old days. That's not what we are looking for. We want to have products that are affordable for most of people, that are, we want to provide cost-effective treatment to prolong life, but especially prolong healthy life.
Yeah.
In fact, by the fact that we will prevent Alzheimer's, that will prevent having cancer, type 2 diabetes, there will be a huge cost saving for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but looking at their, obviously their cap and yours, and obviously very large disparity, is there a danger that they come along and want to take your technology because you are effectively, you have a something that's in the lab phases or in the mice animal stages at the moment?
Yes, it could happen, and that will make our investors very happy.
In fact, it would be a crazy acquisition.
Yes, it's most likely what will happen is we will be acquired by a big pharma. I come from immuno-oncology and I've been in immuno-oncology for 15 years. For 15 years, the idea of using the immune system to fight cancer was very attractive. But for the first 10 years, people say, no, you guys are dreamers. It will never work. It's complicated. And then all of a sudden, there were CAR-T, there was a checkpoint inhibitors, anti-PD-L1, changed the treatment of leukemia, changed the treatment of solid tumors. And everybody wants to do immuno-oncology. And you saw acquisition by pharma who didn't believe in it for the first 10 years. And the 5 years that followed, they will acquire that strategic acquisition for any kind of crazy prices. And you've seen companies like Juno acquired at preclinical stage for crazy amount, over $1 billion. Same thing with Kite. All those CAR T cells, all those checkpoint inhibitors companies have been acquired for huge amount of money. The same thing will happen when pharma will realize that we can consider aging as a risk factor. Yeah. The agency are considering aging as a risk factor. They will constitute an entry barrier, and you will see crazy acquisition.
Have you had contact from, obviously no names mentioned, but do you get approached on a relatively frequent basis?
We already signed a few CDAs by Scout from Pharma. We now see the longevity conferences. I attend longevity conference where I present. The last one in London, for the first time, we had a lot of pharma company attending this kind of conference. When they were not attending the longevity conference, before COVID, it was not interesting. COVID made a huge change in the mindset of pharma. They said, oh gosh, aging is a risk factor, like high blood pressure, like high cholesterol. That's our business. And for them, that's the ultimate business. Mm. You know, high blood pressure, not everybody develop high blood pressure. Cholesterol, everybody will have high cholesterol.
Exactly. Sure. I mean, the other thing is long COVID now. We don't know what the effects on the DNA and the organs are in that. Maybe there's some uses in reversing the effects of long COVID.
Not only the question of long COVID, COVID itself. The focus went on the virus. And that's, I totally agree. That was a low-hanging fruit. We have to develop a vaccine. But remember, an infection is a dance between a host and a pathogen. We focused everything on the pathogen and we didn't focus any effort. Any effort was spent on the host. Why people are getting the same virus
and are asymptomatic. And when people are dying, it's the same virus. So you have to look at the host. And one thing we saw is aging. And not only chronological age, but you know now that we have the possibility to measure your real biological age. So you can be chronologically 50, but in fact, your body is aging like a 60-year-old. And the people who have a high biological age, whatever the age, are more likely to have a severe form of COVID or long COVID. So this is extremely important. I'm very happy that you mentioned that.
So one of the things that we've talked about is that most of these companies are also listed in the US, NASDAQ, I presume. So yeah. Does it not make sense for your company, for Genflow, to be listed on NASDAQ as well as the UK market?
Yes, that's a good question. It's a tough question with the market now because the IPO window is closed. Obviously, we wanted to and to capture the European market. The European market was an empty field, and we wanted to be the first pure play company listed in Europe and capture this empty field. At the same time, we were considering the London listing as a door opener to NASDAQ. The beauty of entering NASDAQ through London is the fact that you can be listed as a foreign entity, still be listed on London, and be listed in NASDAQ. Then you combine the benefit from both worlds. When you stop trading in London, you start trading in New York, so you increase your liquidity, and you know how important it is for investors to have liquidity. You increase also your valuation because it's a different risk aversion in the US and in Europe. The investors in Europe are more shy with early stage biotech, and the valuation is way lower. By going to NASDAQ, we increase our valuation. That's the rationale for going after on NASDAQ. As I mentioned, the IPO window is closed. So I could cry. I could say, it's too bad. And it's also an opportunity. Our valuation is down. The valuation of most of the biotech companies are down. And for us, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity because we are part of the lucky biotech company that have a 2.5-year runway. There's a storm right now on biotech. Some company will die on the storm. We will pass that storm and we'll get out of that storm way stronger. Way stronger because there will be a Darwinian selection, but also because there's an opportunity to merge with other companies. Our objective now, we are actively looking at acquisition of other companies to grow our critical size and to be on NASDAQ, to minimize the fixed costs linked with the NASDAQ listing. So we are working hard on it.
So when you mentioned that M&A side of things, are you talking about being a obviously you mentioned that there could be a potential for an acquisition that would happen, but are you looking at also looking at other, maybe making an acquisition yourself?
Oh, in fact, I don't look to be acquired. I don't want that. I have now 2.5 years of runway of capital that will allow me to increase the valuation of the company dramatically. If I was trying to be acquired at this stage, that would be ridiculous. I can multiply by a factor of 10 the valuation. Biotech is cruel. When you're in preclinical, your valuation stays low. And you do a lot of hard work, and it's difficult to be recognized by the market because it's very technical. What the market wants to see is a signal in efficacy, not in mice, not in pig, not in dog. It wants to see a signal of efficacy in human.
Humans, yeah.
In 2 years, I'm in a position to be there, and then that's a huge increase in your valuation.
Yeah, I mean, we saw
that. And I want to be acquired, not before.
Yeah.
I'm looking to be very clear is to acquire other companies. There's a lot of very good longevity ideas that cannot find the funding now, because if you want to create a longevity company now, it's impossible to find the findings.
Yeah.
The VCs are not investing. The IPO window is closed. So there's a lot of companies who don't have the cash. We have the cash. We have extra cash. We got a lot of non-diluting grants. So we have extra cash. We can acquire for shares and finance the program of those companies. it's super interesting because for your investors, they may say, wow, this company looks good. You know, the science, huge market opportunity, but not for me. It's too dangerous. It's a binary proposition. Either they succeed and I will make a ton of money, or they fail and what's left for me?
Yeah.
Now it's time for us to have a bigger pipeline of products. So if one fails, yes, you have another one. So you're not left with nothing. You still have a huge upside, but you're covered.
3.6 million of cash at the last announcement. And you've got, as you say, about 2.5 years of working capital behind you. So there's no need to come cap in hand again to do another raise. So are you confident that, you know, you can build value into this company, as you say, without any further dilution within that, or not further, there may be further issue of shares, as you say, for an acquisition, which is fine because you're building the business. But are you confident that you've got the money you need to take this company forward and make it a 10X company?
Yes. It's usually arrogant when the CEO says, yes, I can do that in 2.5 years, because in biotech, there's always a problem. Nothing goes according to the plan. There's always a mouse that just goes. If I give you a big yes, it's because when we did the plan of the IPO, we raised the money in the hypothesis that we won't have grants. But we got a great financial non-diluting grant from the Wallonia region. 70% of the R&D costs are covered by the Wallonia region if spent in the EU community. So that's why I can give you this very confident yes.
Tell us just a little bit about what's been happening. Effectively, what have you done so far? In our previous conversations, you said you've given this stuff to mice, or a mouse, and it's lived longer.
Okay, that's a good question, because the mouse is not, it's just part of the story. We need to be approved. Our goal is to get an approval from the health authorities, the European Agency, MHRA, or FDA, to start a clinical trial in human. To do that, we need to demonstrate that we have a strong rationale that it will work in human. What we've done, we tested in human cells, because there's millions of products that cured cancer in mice. There's no market for mice with cancer. No one wants to pay for to sell the mice. So mice is not always relevant. We'll use dogs. Dogs is not always relevant to the human biology. So we use also human cells, but those are cells isolated in a petri dish. And an isolated cell is not also always predictive of what will happen in an organ, in a big organized thing, where there's a lot of different interactions. So what we're doing, we are now doing in terms of demonstrating the benefit of SIR2N6, we're doing that in human cells, isolated. We're doing that in mouse, and after that, we'll confirm the findings in the mouse in a bigger animal, most likely dogs. And we are also working with a French company called Organips that create organoids. So they take isolated cells, fibroblasts, they turn them in iPSCs, inducing pluripotent stem cells, and they can create fake liver or fake kidney or fake pancreas. Because we are now focusing on liver as a demonstration of efficacy, we need to focus on one organ. We have my studies with fibrotic livers. We have human hepatocyte in petri dish, and we will have this organoid of liver. It's a synthetic human liver. It doesn't look exactly like the liver, but it's a fake human liver. And we can test our drug also in this organoid. So it's a new approach. And that's combining the three give us a very good idea of how likely this will be a success or a failure in human. So if it's working in the three, we have a strong rationale to say, yes, we can go. It's very likely that the clinical trial will be a success.
So for all those people who are worried about those mice and dogs, I don't count myself as one of those, but for all those people who are, you're going to make these mice and dogs live longer.
Yes. Oh, and those animals are treated very well. Even the mice, We are starting, we just starting a 300 mile study, and we are bottleneck is in fact the approval from the animal rights, and with everything, the protocol has to be reviewed by a commission for animal rights to be sure that those mice, I'm not even talking about dogs, just the mice will be treated properly, humanely, and we take very good care of those mice. And
humanely.
Those mice,
as if they were the queen's mice or the queen's corgis, basically.
I think we'll behave much better with the queen. With all due respect for the mice.
From the point of view of your current valuation then, at 12.4 million, with a few million pounds in cash and 70% of your R&D covered, how do you view, as the CEO of this company, the current market capitalization of your company?
Yeah. The biotech index is down more than 40% year to date. It's and for preclinical, most of the biotech sector preclinical lost 85% of its valuation. So definitely we're undervalued. We're a bargain. We were already a bargain because we are a European company preclinical compared to a US-based preclinical company, biotech company. It's frustrating. There's not a lot we can do. I'm confident that we'll go through that storm. The fundamentals of the company are very good. We are doing our work. We're not taking any corner. We're not cutting any corner. Everything is moving forward properly. We moved our scientific program on time, no delays. We strengthened our IP. Just last week, we mentioned that one of our patents is moving on PCT. So everything's moving according to plan. We'll pass this storm. The valuation is much more an annoyance. And quite frankly, not even for me. I don't want to sell the company. I don't want to be acquired. So the valuation is not really important. It's annoying for the shareholders. I hope that they understand that this company will rebound as soon as the general climate on biotech will change. We will have even a stronger increase. Our market cap was £35 million at one point, and I think we have the potential to have a very high increase in the market market profits. It's mathematic.
From your past experience, what have you done with other businesses that you've managed? Have you ended up selling any of those businesses? Have they been acquired? What's the background that you have, Eric?
Yes, I've been CEO of a lot of companies, mostly in the US. I've been CEO of private companies that I sold to pharma. I've been CEO of a listed company that I listed on different exchange. I listed company on the Nordic NASDAQ. I listed company on OTC QB in the US. I listed company on NASDAQ with a market cap over $350 million. The objective is to bring this company with a market cap on NASDAQ with a market cap over the $350 million. That's kind of the threshold where you start to become a significant company, a significant player in the longevity game.
So that would be your slightly longer term goal, to take this company onto NASDAQ at $350 million or more?
That's a short-term game. The ultimate game is to be acquired for a much larger amount than $350 million. So again, one of the, biotech is still high, you know, it's a typical high risk, high reward. In our case, I think the risk is well-defined. And we do everything to mitigate the risk. I mentioned that we will acquire a company to extend our portfolio, our pipeline, and that's part of mitigating the risk. But on the reward side, the upside is fantastic. Right now, again, we are bargaining. So smart investors, they will understand that every crisis is an opportunity and they can have, it's even more upside.
Yeah, I mean, if this biotechnology is proven to work in humans, and from speaking to you the last time, you have a pretty deep conviction that using something that comes out of the human body in people who naturally live longer and giving everybody the opportunity to have that food, if you like, to repair the DNA seems extremely simplistic and logical. So from that perspective, I truly think you've got a great chance of it working. And if that works, basically, this is something that you're going to give to 7 billion people on the planet, not just a small group of people.
Exactly. It's we're targeting everybody. You said if it works, I think we have a good shot. We have a good shot because the centenarian SIRT26 is obviously working. People who have this mutation are living over 100 years. So it's a clear demonstration that it's working. Now, the gene delivery system is also working. ExoAAVs have been used to treat hemophilia, for example, and have delivered the gene for hemophilia. So we know that this system is working. So all we do is to combine two things that are supposed to work perfectly well. So if you combine one, so is working, the other one is working, the two together should be working. And we already seen that we can express this gene pretty well in different systems.
One thing we have to say, Sunday Roast, this is a question we ask every guest, is what is your ultimate Sunday Roast? I know you obviously live in Belgium, and I'm not sure what the archetypal equivalent of the British Sunday Roast would be out there, but tell us, what is your favorite Sunday Roast, Eric?
You mean my favorite food?
Sure.
In fact, as a longevity person, I will disappoint you because I typically do intermittent fasting. So I lower my calories and I try to eat within an 8-hour window. Among the lifestyle change, there's three things you can do to increase your longevity right now. It's this intermittent fasting and lowering your caloric intake, get good sleep, and also avoid stupid things like smoking and drinking.
I'll drink to that, Eric. I'll drink to that. So,
unfortunately, I try to eat mostly plant-based, so I'm afraid that's a kind of boring guy for a Sunday roast. It's a terrible question.
Oh, come on, Eric. I didn't expect, like, I thought we got the body coach on. I thought we got Joe Wicks on, a dietitian, but come on. What is your guilty meal when you feel, you know, you must, if you're stressed, you want the comfort food. What is that?
No. I live in Belgium, so chocolate, definitely.
Okay, perfect. Chocolate,
yes. No, that's
chocolate roast.
he does like the fondue, but he uses a chocolate fondue and dips bread in.
Chocolate, not roast.
Chocolate's fine.
Perfect.
Chocolate, not roast.
Eric Lear, CEO of GenFlow Biosciences. It's been a pleasure.
No, thank you. It was a very pleasant interview. Bye.
Yep. Thank you. And I hope you live a long time, Eric.
Thank you. You too, guys.
We need some of yours. So I'm 54 years old. So next few years, I want some.
Blimey, you've had a tough paper round, Kev. So what else has been on the radar this week? How's your week been so far? Or should I say, how's the week been as a recap?
The week as a recap, if I want to have some optimism and some blind faith, I suppose, when we've had the period that we've just had, I've been looking at a few of the analysis that we normally look at when there's negative situations in the markets. And you look at the VIX, which is really a thing they use in mainly in the States, but it's basically the volatility index. And the volatility index went way up to 36, 37, 38, I think it was, in about a month ago. And it stayed there really for a couple of weeks. But we've seen in the last week to 10 days that dramatically decreased. Like, it's down over 30% now. It's around 25 point something or other. And if you look at the times when things were fairly steady, then anything in VIX below 20 then becomes a time where volatility should be less and the stock should start to do a bit better. The other positive scenario is that the US dollar's down from its high as well of 105 in its basket to 101 something, you know, a 4% shift. And really, it should be a hell of a lot more. And many people are predicting it's going to go down to its sort of yearly lows of
I mean, the US dollar was it? I think it was like a two-decade high, wasn't it? In the last,
that
was
crazy.
It was unbelievable considering the levels of inflation. And yet, the bizarre point for us is that the pound against the dollar is you know, I think it dropped to like $1.22 when it was $1.40 about a year ago. So like, why is the pound, that some of the strategists are saying that it could sink to as low as $1.19. I mean, how can the dollar be that strong against the pound? It just doesn't add up to me.
Well, I mean, it's a place of safety, isn't it? That's what people have said. You know, it's like, let's all run for the safe haven, if you like. But you know, the problem with that
makes sense because if inflation is so rampant as we know it is in the UK, then your dollar should be buying you less, and the dollar should be buying you less than it ever has done right now, than it ever has done, because they reckon over the last 20 years the dollar has been weakening and weakening. As you say, you've got the VIX, you've got the velocity of the dollar, and ultimately, they, you know, the Fed obviously upped the interest rates while we were there, didn't they, to you know, by 0.5% or something like that. And ultimately the same in the UK. They reckon the real rate of inflation is probably around the 25% mark. And probably in Egypt, it's probably more like 40% or something ridiculous. But ultimately, the mad part is it shouldn't be as strong. Like normally when you've got high inflation, the dollar should devalue, you know, other people go to other currencies, whether that be gold, hedge against inflation, and Bitcoin you think could be doing well, but it's not, it's gone the opposite. Like fiat currencies have always been devalued when inflation's been high.
But I think we're looking at on a week or a month basis, and actually maybe we'll look back in a year's time or in 2 years' time, and this will have been the turning point where we see the dollar start to depreciate. And maybe it won't be rapid, but, you know, just slowly but surely depreciate down to a reasonable level, because it's got to be hurt in America as well in terms of many imports, how expensive they are for them to import anything. They're a huge net importer of goods. They have notioned in the last day, I think, or two, that effectively there's going to be a pause in raising rates later in the year, so this has then allowed the dollar to come off a bit. And you know, I think that story will continue. There'll be such weakness.
Do you think with like a lot of traders that are increasingly shorting the pound now, which we've obviously seen, which is obviously also contributing to its weakness, do you think that that is going to give the Americans, you know, and some of the hand of the biggest companies, the ability to then come and make a swoop for some of our, you know, lower valued companies, maybe on the FTSE 100, not the likes of BP and that, but the, you know, the smaller companies, maybe Vodafone and you know, Unilever and GSK, they could easily be potential targets.
Yeah, you think those companies are effectively on sale at the minute in terms of the US point of view.
Exactly.
Not necessarily those companies you talked about, but any companies. I mean, you look at, pick one that we've followed recently. Ben's Creek's a good example, or Conroy Gold, okay? Basically, Ben's Creek's worth £300 million, which now is only $400 million, okay, or thereabouts. But that same company that's going to be producing that much coal in the future and that much profit is probably a Warrior Met Coal type thing, which is worth $1.3 billion or something, you know? So it's like, Where's the comparison? Because their dollar is so strong, it makes that cheap because it's in sterling in terms of its denomination, even though everything is going to be valued. The same, I mean, I can't really understand why gold hasn't been a better store of value in this time. But again, maybe we're looking at too short a time scale. Yeah. And actually, over a longer time scale, these things are going to play out, that gold will increase in value because it's a good store of value, as we know, and it's a hedge against inflation. You know, some of these stocks Yeah. I mean, we were having a talk before we even started this conversation about resource-based stocks, and most of the stocks that we follow,
yeah,
they're undervalued, all of them. You know, yeah, I mean,
I agree, and I think
that's almost without exception.
Sure.
And that I could make a list of, I think, 30, 40, 50 companies where I would say to myself, they have to be worth more. You know, have to be. They've been hit by a high dollar. They've been hit by basically people just thinking, oh, no, the resource sector is not really the place to be. But this whole EV thing is not going away. And maybe the first phase was buy the EV car makers. The second phase has to be to buy the things that are needed to make the EVs because there's not enough of it.
Yeah.
So
I think you're right. And I think that I hope that there is some more money coming in. I mean, there was talk of this wall of private equity cash waiting on the sidelines to be deployed around 2021. And that money hasn't seemed to or appeared to have actually come into the market yet. And there was talk of like something like $1.8 trillion sat there on the sidelines in equivalent from these investment firms and trust funds or trusts. And it just makes you wonder when and if we will see that money that's been sat on the sidelines as powder to actually come in and into the market.
Yeah, because you look at individual stocks that often resource-based, you know, you look at them. I mean, we talked this week with the Teck Mineral guys. I mean, what an opportunity. I mean, for me, it's still valued at £40 million or thereabouts. You know, there's a good chance within a year or two they're going to be having that much a year in profit.
Yeah.
So
this was the RNS that said that recyclers were awarded the second EA permit for the Wolverhampton site for the lithium ion batteries. So yeah, that was great news. Market completely, I wouldn't say missed it. It reacted a little bit, but yeah, massively, massively undervalued stock for me. This one at the 3.1p, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I mean, we've mentioned Benn's Creek already. Benn's Creek came out and said they've started underground mining, which was that thing that we went underground in, which I'm trying to forget. but you can imagine now they're going to be bringing tons of that coal out from the coal seam that we went inside. And this is high vol A coal now. So this is basically not to be sold as high vol A, but to improve the quality of the high vol B that they have, which basically will mean that they'll get a premium for it. So it'll be high vol AB, if you like.
Yeah,
which should mean they get a better price from it.
I think the market's waiting on the trains, isn't it, though, now? I mean, obviously, that news was great, really well received. But
yeah,
I think ultimately, it'd be nice to get maybe next week or the week after, certainly the start of June, we'd like to see some news on those trains. It'd be good to see.
Yeah. And then there's Mast Energy as well. I mean, what's happening there? I mean, are we in the middle of an electricity crisis or not?
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to need these gas peaking stations. It's a fact. We need them, and we need many more of them if we want to have this situation. So, I mean, that is just a few. I mean, I was talking with you this week as well about putting a group of gold miners together, because I really just think, well, gold explorers, not miners, you know. And you've got Mila Resources there who could do very well with the extra gold. Is it next to Bellevue in Australia? You got Greatland Gold already. They've found millions and millions of ounces of gold, and potentially going to find the same again and more probably. And it's been battered. You got Conroy Gold. You got Wishbone Gold, who are about to drill two different places, and then a third one is going to be again during the summer. You've got Eastar Resources. Again, Eastar Resources, great opportunity there now that they've gone into the heavy rare earth metals. They've basically got an option on a place now. It's already got 20,000 tons of the stuff at $80,000 a ton. That's 1.6 billion if you want to do your maths. So that could be a producer within 18 months. Before that situation, probably was going to be assessing its gold situation, which is great as well, by the way. But all of that for, you know, £6 or £7 million, I think the market cap is £7 million. Then you got Landor, You got Caracol Gold, which seems to have just dumped since it came onto the market. Yeah, from what I can see, they're finding more gold, expanding all the time. You've got Oriel Resources, which, I mean, we were in and it did extremely well, didn't it? And then we had to come out of it. And now it's like worth virtually nothing. It's worth less than £5 million. Why? And all the assets are actually progressed and in a better place than they were. Hummingbird, Cora Gold, I don't know much about them, but there are so many of those gold things. Now, if gold is going to be this store of wealth through these next number of years, because in my view, inflation isn't just here to say hello for a day or two. It's going to be here for a while. So, yeah, I personally think the market's going to do very well. Inflation often says, people think inflation is bad for markets, but it's actually not, because most companies can have pricing power during this time, which they've lost over the last 10 years or more because there's been no inflation. So effectively, some companies, and choosing the right ones, could be very, very profitable over the next period of time.
Good. Let's do a review of some of the RNSs then that we haven't obviously mentioned else. So we've got African Pioneer had one related to the drilling program at Ongombo in Namibia. 25 to 30 hole shallow diamond drill program has commenced on the Ongombo project. Six holes completed to date. Visual estimate of chalcopyrite content in the mineralized zones indicate notable quantities of copper sulfide to date. So it looks like things are progressing pretty well there, really, in Namibia. And it was nice to actually get an update from them, because it feels like it's been a couple of months now, isn't it, since really the last time we heard from Colin. And obviously, while on the subject of Colin, there was also an announcement on Friday that the extract resources as well. What did you think? Was it nice to see a continuation of the assay results there and progress at Bushranger?
Stonking amount of gold in the Ascot top of the porphyry. So yeah, that puts a completely different angle on the whole thing, that this really could be a gold discovery as well as a copper discovery in a meaningful way. Because basically, as it goes down to depth, there is potential then for even more gold. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. And I think the market quite liked it as well, didn't they? I think it went up quite a bit on Friday, like up 10%.
Seed Innovations as well had obviously the update on Yuma Wellness. Yep. And obviously they also had the update on the Leap Gaming as well, which was has been very well received, actually. If you look at the performance, I think like five days. So I run it as obviously as a week performance percentage change in the last 5 days. And the total return on out of that one, I think Angle obviously did extremely well. They got the FDA approval for Parsotix, which is really, really well done to holders of Angle, because that one's been in the waiting for probably about 3 or 4 years. It certainly seems like it's been at least 2 years, probably even longer than that. So as I say, extremely well done on that to all Angle holders. It's great to see these stocks, and it actually did, I think it did. It certainly did about 60-70% in one day, maybe even more than that. So great to see news actually moving in these stocks. It seems like a very rare occurrence. But Seed Innovations is up 33% in the week. So it's been one of the star performers on the whole of the market. And a message from Ed saying he's very happy, but it still feels like fair value has not been reached in any of these, you know, in all their investments. So it's very encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a few times with Ed over the last 6 months or more. It was one of our stocks of 2022, or is one of our stocks of 2022. I think now it's above our buy-in price. So it's another positive looking one. And to be honest with you, when the gaming company actually floats, then we're basically talking it should be worth well over twice what it's worth now. And I think that's what Ed is basically talking about, because it's a big part of Seed's portfolio. They own 42%, I think it is, of Leap Gaming. And, you know, I don't know exactly what Leap Gaming is going to be valued at, but it's not going to be £10 million, that's for sure. It's going to be...
Yeah.
significantly more, you know, maybe it's 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 million pounds. Who knows? All part of that conglomerate that now owns UFC. Basically, the main company now owns UFC, also owns a fair proportion of Leap Gaming. So a lot of these things are being tied into to different gaming situations in different sports all over the world. Because of the tie-up of the main companies that are involved in Leap Gaming. So it's very exciting. And I think it was announced, that announcement was based on the fact that they've now got their UK license, I think, to start doing it in the UK as well. So you might see that enter football and, you know, some of the bigger things that are in the UK. So yeah, Seed is a good one and one to look out for, I think. Sure. I mean, maybe that's a good idea to actually just have a look at our stocks of 2022, because we are currently 0.22% up overall in all of those stocks. And we were 29% up at one point, so that you can see what has happened over the market. You know, so you've got Extract Resources, I think, is up over the time. You've got Chill Brands, which has been a nightmare when we were issuing at 15p. It's now at 2.5p. Let's hope that can progress. We've got Cloudbreak, who literally went for the moon and then came back down again. And I can't understand why it's now back at 3p, but such is life. We've now got Seed, which is now up. We were talking at 5.6p. It's now 6.35. Well, Curis Minerals, which also had news today. We didn't talk about that, or not today, this week.
Come on to that if I could get a word in.
Curis Minerals, like, it was 14p when we talked about it. It's 12p, but I think there's a hell of a lot of upside in that. And announcements this week, which were pretty exciting in terms of extra info coming in from EV Metals, was it? Who are the main shareholder?
Yeah, they've got into an alliance with EV Metals, you know, which is obviously one of their large, very large shareholders. It's an integrated global battery chemicals and technology business. So, yeah, it looks really good. And I quite like that they're moving out, you know, not just obviously they are a Cyprus base, but there's other things being worked, as have been alluded to in the RNSs. So it certainly looks like that they're changing, not moving away from it, because obviously Martin Churchhouse is still on as in an advisory role. He's still very much heavily involved with the work on the ground in Cyprus. But it's just interesting to see how these countries are are moving into new directions, really.
Yeah, I spoke very briefly with Charles Long this week as well, when he was on the train going into London, who's the new CEO. And yeah, I think quite a lot of exciting things are coming on. So hopefully we can speak to him in the next week or two. Then we've got Blenco Resources. Again, we're going to need this graphite. Don't quite understand why it's valued as lowly as it is. We've got Ben's Creek, which is the best performer of the year for us, 153% up. We recommended at 34p in January, which seems a long time ago. And now it's 86p and has been over a pound. We've got Mast Energy. We recommended that 8.5. It's 3.3p. Again, don't understand it. We've got Love Hemp. That one is actually bended at the minute, so not much point in talking about that one right now. Hydrogen Utopia, recommended 7.5. As it listed, it's now 6p. Let's hope that the island initiative happens and we can get that first of a kind, because then I think it will absolutely rocket. Then you've got African Pioneer, which is up 42.5%. You got Conroy down 15%. You got Contango down 14%. You got Acadian Energy down 1%. You know, I think Conroy for me is massively undervalued. Contango, you know, let's hope that they come up with some news. It's been very quiet the last while. And, you know, if there's any news on that, is very undervalued. Acadian Energy, again, for what resources they have, is crazily undervalued. And it's probably been hit a little bit by this taxation that's come in on profits, but they haven't got any profits and they're not going to have any profits for a while. So I think it's a red herring that this should be affected. But you know, it's one of those things. Yeah. So our overall portfolio for the year is up 0.2%.
Yeah, I mean, that just I guess that sums up the market, doesn't it? The retracement, as I keep mentioning, the constant retracement of this market, when you think things can't get much worse, it just continues to retrace. And, you know, what was the right way of doing that? You know, if you'd have invested whatever, 10,000 in, and you were, you know, if you were 29% up, you'd have had $3,000 profit on that 10 grand investment. Would it have been the right thing to do? Would it have been to sell them all when you think you were, you know, when you were happy with that 30%? Is that a trading mentality? No,
possibly. When you think about individual stocks, we talk about Cloudbreak, CDL. If you had invested at 1.8 pence and it went to 12p, would you have been wise to take some of your money? You would have been, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, even speaking to Kyler, he knows himself he would have been wise to take some cash.
Yeah, no, I get that. And it's easy for people to say, well, you know, it's not done. But that's why we set targets on there, as if to say, this is our target. And two of them have hit the target, right? Ben hit the pound target. I think we had 80p. It smashed that. And CDL smashed its target. So two of them, people should be sitting pretty on that, really, if they had have taken some of those profits. And so, yeah, ultimately, as I say, I think it's just a time where you've just got to sit back, switch off a little bit from it and put your faith in these companies to deliver, right?
Yeah, I mean, what we also have to think about is that these are companies. They're not just tickers. You know, things are happening. I suppose the way that the market is working just at the minute is when things go right, they're not really being rewarded. But when things are going wrong, they're being smashed. So again, small cap, high risk, high reward. When things go well, we can make hundreds of percent. When things go badly, we can lose significant amounts. And that's, I suppose, the situation that we're playing.
Well, on that note, have a good weekend.
Yeah, all the best, everybody.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.